work. He is a very hard worker for the city. He has done a tremendous amount of work pro bono. And unless there is further discussion or after the discussion, I would like to move his appointment, reappointment.
Yes, Ms. Wilson.
I too have been impressed with him and I've met him, and I just need more of a it's more of an explanation for me, because I know he does work with the city. I know we have a lot of people who do that. I was just trying to understand how that works and isn't a conflict of interest.
Meaning, I'm not sure, being on commission plus doing work for the city?
He has a lot of work that depends on...
We have lots of people who do that.
I agree. Yeah. I just need to understand. I'm just trying to... It's been brought up as a question, and I don't really understand the rules behind conflict of interest.
But they're not employees of the city.
Okay. And that's all that would be.
Yeah. Okay. They're not employees. As we have Terrence Morris, who does work with the city. Jason Rosenberg does a lot of work with the city. And they're on various commissions and boards.
Okay.
Okay.
They have to recuse themselves.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Only if it's something that's specific to their development.
Right,
exactly.
Yeah, but they're special.
Yeah. Okay, any other discussion?
Can we lose somebody over there?
One, two, three, four, we get a quorum.
Yep, we do. All right, any further discussion? If not, all those in favor? That's Alderman Swiston, Baker, Johnson, Kalist, and Danberg. Great. The next item is 196-13, Christopher Steele, 702 Chestnut Street, Wauben, reappointed as member of the Economic Development Commission for a term to expire May 14, 2016. Mr. Steele is here. Would you like to come up and talk to us?
Absolutely.
Okay. Anybody has any questions, concerns? Any questions for Mr. Steele? Any comments from Mr. Steele about the EDC, or?
I think we'd like to hear from Mr. Steele.
Well, it's been an honor and pleasure to serve on the EDC over the past 3 years. When first appointed, I had a certain idea as to what the EDC actually did. That concept was absolutely and utterly blown out of the water. But just by the nature of events that kind of came to our table over the next 3 years, I'm very pleased to have had a chance to do a lot of things that have started conversations with regards to vitality and vibrancy of those centers, with regards to discussing redevelopment opportunities around the city, and also for really starting to push a little bit more of the promotion of the city as a place to do business, both by engaging with small businesses across the city as well as trying to find ways of upping our profile quite a bit. And I would be very, very honored to continue that work.
Okay. Any questions, comments? Yes, Alderman Swiston.
I just want to comment that I think that we have really benefited from Mr. Steele's leadership with the EDC when he was there. I originally was very sad to see him step down as president, but I'm going to say I've been really impressed with his with the current president. So I think that we've started a really great trend there. I do agree, and I realize that it's a combination of a number. I think our mayor has some credit to take for it, as well as Amanda, for what's been happening in the city. But I'm very pleased, and I think he's been a great contribution.
Can I just answer? Mm-hmm. So just with regards to the historically in the past, we had had a tradition of rotating the chair on a yearly basis, and there was a purpose behind it. It was to make sure that we weren't overly dependent on any one individual with regards to setting the goal, the mission, and the direction of the EDC, as well as to get a chance to really refresh the kinds of ideas and priorities that the EDC was working to push. I have my own strengths, which I know, and I have my own weaknesses, which I know very well. We got to a point where it was important for us to really be focusing quite a bit on the promotional aspect, and we had an individual that knows how to do that.
Well, I definitely see that. So it's just been, I've been really pleased to see the direction we've been going as a city, and great partnering with our new president of the Chamber of Commerce. Things have been going well.
Any other comments or questions?
I'll move to approve.
Okay, motion to approve. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor? That's Alderman Swiston, Baker, Johnson, Danberg, and Kalis. So,
Thank you very much.
It will be voted on the floor of the board on Monday night.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much. Okay, the next item, 214-12, Alderman Danberg Blazer Schwartz, proposing an ordinance which would enable the city to respond to properties which are so inadequately cared for, often by absentee owners, as to constitute a nuisance not only to properties nearby, but also to the public at large, with the understanding that timely intervention may help prevent the loss of such properties to severe neglect, excess accumulation of trash, or unsightly collectibles inside or out, or even eventual abandonment. And so we talked about this, I think it was at our last meeting, and we had quite a discussion, and Dory, we decided that we needed to have you and Commissioner Lojack, and so he'll be in a little bit, but if you could come up to the table and so we can talk a little bit about what the issues are, and thank you, Marie. Because there is draft language. Dory, I don't know if you had a chance to look at it. It is in the back of our agenda here. Yes, Marie?
Just to give the committee just a brief reminder and bring the story up to speed. This item, Alderman Danberg brought this item, and Blazer and Schwartz brought this item in order to try to address properties that are very, they're basically full of junk, trash, contamination, whatever degree. We talked last week, as the community remembers, about the very difficulty and the very fine line between really legislating and regulating nuisances, such or and legislating to taste or aesthetics. And, you know, with the old adage that one man's treasure is another man's eyesore. And we talked also about currently in Newton, or in many communities who do not have ordinances such as this, the communities have to rely on violations of sanitary code or fire code. Sometimes these accumulations do rise to the level of a breach of one of those codes, and that, I don't know, accumulations of trash or pools of stagnant water that accumulate or attract vermin or mosquitoes, perhaps could rise to the level of health bears. And also sometimes overgrown brush or accumulated debris might be a fire hazard. However, there are a few that perhaps have not risen to that level, and yet, so there's no real way to enforce or to get these properties at least officially cleaned up. We talked about one particular case in, I think it was Lawrence, in which got a lot of publicity, and a man was the owner of this, what I call it, junk yard, was ordered to clean it up, but we found that that was not as the result of enforcement of one of these types of ordinances, but it was a health department prosecution under the health violation of the sanitary code. So when the committee last met, they did want to speak with Commissioner Lojack, who will be in, I assume, and they had asked him to talk to a couple of his colleagues, his other commissioners in, I believe it was maybe Wellesley and Needham, in which this ordinance was modeled pretty much after those ordinances, to see how they were being enforced and if they were working well in those two cities. But I think the committee wished to talk with you as well to decide or to discuss whether, in fact, the health department could or should be more, active in these types of properties. And I think we didn't know if, and we still don't know whether the health department has gotten any complaints about properties such as this. There's one in particular that was a problem that kind of was the instigator to this, but there are a few other properties that are in issue as well.
Dick, do you want to take the first conversation on that?
We're just
bringing Dory up.
Just a nutshell recap of the last episode.
So have you spoken yet? No.
Uh-huh.
Right, well, this property has been around for a long time, and it's been...
Alderman Blaisdell, I really encourage you not to focus on a property. It's focusing on an issue that may cross...
Well, I was going to say, this is the property that gave rise to the issue. So there is an issue. The issue that we're dealing with is properties that have basically filled with junk, and quite sizable properties, quite sizable amounts of junk, and how to deal with them. My understanding from the Commissioner of Inspectional Services is that unless there's an ordinance which can give him the power to try to enforce the ordinance to clear up these properties, that there's nothing he's going to do or can do until there is an ordinance. My concern is that there are properties that need to be looked at by Inspectional Services and need to be cleaned up. And there, some of them, I'm not going to mention specifics, but they're there, and we know about them. So, if there's not a health and health problem, it's still a junkyard problem. And that's why Alderman Danberg and I and Alderman Schwartz filed this. And I find it somewhat strange that there seems to be a resistance to an ordinance which has been passed in other towns and it's been enforced in other towns, and that for some reason there's a reluctance to do that here unless there is a health problem, there's vermin in the yard, although we don't even know in some instances what's in the yards, because unless there's an inspector goes out there and sees them, you know, there won't be any enforcement of anything. So our attempt here is just to have an ordinance drafted and initiated that will allow the city to come in and make inspections to look at this kind of these properties.
I think I'd like to give Commissioner
so this doesn't help us in any way.
Mm-hmm.
If there are rodents and we get called, we go out, and usually the situation with rodents is that somebody calls and thinks they're only in someone else's yard, and usually they're in both yards, and we then mediate with the two property owners to both call in pest control and get rid of the rats. But it's uncommon for them to only be on one side of a fence and not both, since they're burrowing. So we don't have any problem going in on those sorts of calls. We've gotten some calls for potentially standing water in various yards, and we can go in based on concerns about mosquitoes and have done so. We've also gotten calls for a property where somebody feeds the birds, and the neighbors are concerned about bird excrement in their yards and what potential diseases might be spread by that. And that's not actually something we can really do anything about, and there really isn't much that bird excrement can transmit. It's dirty, but
not
a health hazard, and most of what's listed here might be unsightly, but not a health hazard. So this would not in any way empower my department to go in. I also, housing complaints are difficult for us because we've got four inspectors who inspect everything from recreational camps to septic systems to the 400 food facilities we have in the city, and we do not go out proactively to look at housing issues. We do go out when there are complaints, and I would say that more than 50% of the time they're actually landlord-tenant disputes, and we're pretty careful to say we'll come in, we'll do an inspection for violations of the sanitary code. If we find them, the landlord is obligated to fix them. But once they are fixed, then usually one side or the other comes back and says, yeah, but they didn't pay their rent, or they're withholding their something, and we have to say this is now a legal matter. We've dealt with the health and safety aspects, and there's nothing further we can do, and we have sometimes even written letters to both parties saying, you know, the level of our involvement in housing issues goes to this. And so if something were written in such a way that my department would be obligated to get involved in these sorts of complaints, it would be a considerable hardship to us. We do not have the personnel to deal with issues. When they're outside, they are by and large not health problems. So I would have a problem with that. And in fact, I brought you a copy of an ordinance that we do have on the books, which is certificates of habitability, which is the responsibility of my department to do every 2 years or with a turnover of tenant in apartments. And it spells out all the stuff we're supposed to do, and there's no way in which we do this because we have no idea who's leaving various apartments after 2 years. So we already have an ordinance on the books that is absolutely impossible to do anything about. So if the committee were interested in getting rid of an ordinance, that would be a very good one to get rid of because there's no way in which we can actually
Just wanted to add this. You know, this ordinance was not passed to give you the jurisdiction.
No, I understand.
You understand that? Okay.
Yes. No, I see that.
Alderman Blazer, in the purpose, it talks about health. Mm-hmm. Health, safety, and welfare of the citizens. So I just use the health and human services. So that's
I understand this wasn't designed to be in our bailiwick. I'm saying that outside, there's very little that actually does pose a health risk, and there are other ways in which we are brought in for most of those things I can think of that would be a health risk.
Right. Alderman Danberg, Swiston, then Hess McCann.
Okay. Thank you, Dory, for giving us that overview, and I think that this really ought to clarify for everybody the fact that this is not, we're not here trying to redefine the parameters of the health department. What we're dealing with here is something different than rodents and mosquitoes. Although this type of a situation could certainly cause those things, and that's why those things were even mentioned in here. We had discussed last week the possibility of just striking out, and I would certainly be friendly to listening to, striking out any mention of overgrown vegetation, which is in three locations, because I think that could be a slippery slope. There are a few houses in Newton, and I would say, I don't know, I know about three or four of them, and so there could be 10 or 12 of them, that have a yard condition that over the years has gotten not only untenable but outrageous in the opinion of the entire neighborhoods that live near these places. A couple of them that I am thinking of right now have what can only be termed an unlicensed junkyard. We try to be objective in the amount in how we would describe these circumstances. And the other towns that have similar ordinances that they are able to enforce and do enforce have described, and more than one has described, more than 375 cubic feet of items that are not that would be considered junk in a yard, and or furniture that cannot be used for the purpose that it was designed to be used for. So in other words, couches, five or six baby strollers, junk baby strollers that no longer have their wheels, that type of thing, littering a yard. And if a yard gets so littered with this stuff that the nobody wants to even purchase a house in the neighborhood because of this, there is a problem that needs to be looked at. And this is what we're trying to do. This ordinance, it describes it in the first paragraph, junk or debris. It describes the amount, which we've called 375 cubic feet. The time that you're allowed to have it there, if you are just storing it for somebody, which is 60 days, that it can't, it is either able to be viewed by the public or the neighbors so as to constitute a nuisance. In other words, if you have 60-foot trees all around and nobody even knows that it's there, then I'm not sure that I would go in and say that that's a neighborhood problem. It talks about who would be the regulatory authority, and that is, we've discussed the possibility of that being ISD, but that is still up for discussion. Who enforces it, and what kind of notice of violation? So we've gone through and tried to hit all of the points. A year or so ago, when we looked at another problem that could have been aesthetic, which was the home abandonment issue, there were those voices that said that if you want to own a house and leave it vacant for a year or more than 6 months, shouldn't you be able to do that? And we weren't going after the homes that weren't a problem, that didn't have anybody living in them. We were going after the homes that had broken windows, left their windows open so that all the pipes froze on the inside, it ruined all the walls and interior. There were animals going in and out, although the animals may not have been a health hazard, they were still living in there free of rent. And vegetation was overgrowing, and it was the board and the city deemed that this was in fact a problem that we needed to address. We addressed it, and the problem has pretty much gone away. And so we're looking to try and do the same thing with this issue, which is running an unlicensed junkyard in the middle of a residential neighborhood in Newton. We're not going after somebody who has a couch on their porch that has a tear in it. We're going after the egregious cases, and there aren't very many of them, but boy, when they're there, they are a problem. And the neighborhood has been pleading with us in Ward 6 to deal with the ones that are in Ward 6. And so as a result, we have an attempt at this ordinance.
Okay, great. Thank you. Alderman Swister.
So, a couple of things about this docket item that, you know, made me want to listen. I thought the issue was that there were suspicion of some, you know, habitability issues that what had troubled me, and Alderman Blazer said it again today, was that the reluctance for inspectional services to, there may be actual violations, but because they don't want to check, we don't know.
Well, we can have Commissioner Lojack comment
on that.
So you might want to wait.
Right.
Whatever.
I had hesitated because as I was thinking this, I'm pretty sure I asked the commissioner the question before, so I just thought I'd bring it up to see. Because it may very well be that his answer is just not registering with me, because I do feel like I've asked that question before, and for the life of me, I can't remember his answer.
Commissioner Lojack, would you like to drag a chair up to the table, please?
Here.
Okay.
So that's one question.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch the question that you don't know the answer to.
Well, before you walked in, Alderman Blazer had brought in that when he had spoken to the Inspection Services, there was this frustration that there was no ordinance that would allow you to go inspect and therefore detect any violation, which I didn't quite understand. I'm here, if somebody suspects that there is a code violation, why can't you go in and check? If there isn't one, there isn't one. But if there's a suspicion, why is there an additional ordinance needed to let you go?
Well, right adventure.
Okay.
The right of entry is something we teach our people very strictly. People's privacy rights are tantamount. We have no right to go on their property unless they have a permit for one.
Okay.
Or if their property is abandoned for another, we have the right to go from the front sidewalk to the front door.
Mm-hmm.
We can then inquire the occupants if they would allow us on their property. If they say no, we must leave.
So it's the privacy of the occupants, not the privacy of the owner.
Occupants, owner, whoever occupies the property.
No, but which it does, because the reason why it does come up is you and I are a favorite landlord.
Mm-hmm.
One of his complaints is...
Which one is that?
yes. I do know that... So it's more the it's privacy of the occupants, right? Because the thing is...
Citizen has a right to privacy.
No, because the thing is we do walk in on landlords all the time, and we don't require their permission to walk in on their property. If the tenants let us in, then we can go in.
Correct, but you're a realtor. I'm law enforcement.
No. When I say we, I meant the city.
I can go up and ask them for permission to enter. They let me in, they let me in. If they don't, I must leave.
I know, but it's the it's the occupant. That's the clarification that I need.
If I can clarify, the issue here is not whether the commissioner can go onto a property to enforce. He actually would not be able to under this ordinance either. The issue is that there is no code violation keeping of this type of junk unless it rises to a real health hazard or fire hazard. There is no code violation in the building code. So that's the issue.
Well, there is. I know at least one.
Okay, let me see if I can take this back.
Okay.
My recollection of when we talked a couple weeks ago, Commissioner Lojack, is that your inspectors and inspector, whatever, said that they had no means. So they needed an ordinance. This is what I remember from you, Alderman Blazer, is nothing to enforce. So that this was crafted along what they did in Needham and mm-hmm. Wayland?
Wellesley,
Needham.
So I guess what would be important to understand is, from your perspective, what do your inspectors need in order to address concerns that citizens have been raised about various collections of junk and debris as outlined in this draft ordinance? I think that's part of our confusion. What's the tool that you're missing in your toolbox?
Well, I think there are a number of issues here. It seems to me that it would become very subjective. And they have a cubic foot of accumulated junk.
Mm-hmm.
Is that pile of junk and that pile not? And is it an accumulation? Is it throughout the property? We start at the front left corner, and it's 5x5, that's 25 cubic feet, so I get 5x5x5, and that's a pile of junk as I determine it, and there's another pile over there, but there's nothing wrong with that pile. How do I know that? That's the shingles I just had to have my roof done later on, but you're calling it junk, because it might look like junk to somebody outside, but it's not. But that is junk. And is it accumulation of 12 of property, 375 cubic feet, or in one spot on the property? I think it becomes, and as we say before, one person's junk is another person's treasure. Now you're going to determine people's lifestyle. I've collected
50 buckets that I want to use for something that's coming up. But that rises to a level of the neighbor thinks that's junk, and I think it's something I need. It really becomes very, very tricky. Now, I've seen the examples. I've been to the properties. And, you know, some of them seem troublesome. We have so few of these in the city because of the value of property. I mean, there are others where if they have certain types of stuff out there, like abandoned vehicles, like abandoned, you know, stuff that we can make them remove them, you know, like a broken down shed, that kind of stuff, we can make them work on that. The other stuff, the, just the stuff put in the yard, listen, one person's junk is another person's garden. And indeed, that particular property, the guy's gardening there. What am I going to tell him? What can he use for gardening? You can't use tops for gardening. You can't use buckets for gardening. You can't use an accumulation of old mop handles for holding up your tomato plants. Honestly, I'm not getting the tomatoes again. But the point is, it becomes, you know, very, very subjective. And if I go out there, I might find that place to be an abomination. Bill Forty goes out there and says, my grandfather, yeah, just like that. Who's, you know, so I go out to enforce and it's a problem. Someone else goes to enforce and it's fine. I think if the board decides to do something this, it has to be pretty airtight about what you want me to do. Because we're pretty busy with all the other stuff we've got to do.
The other question.
And I don't want to be chasing our tail.
We were interested, Commissioner Lojack, about what conversations you may have had with your colleagues in Wellesley and Needham, because they have these, this wording in the draft language is modeled after those two communities. Mm-hmm. Am I correct?
Yeah.
And in their ability to take this and enforce it.
I haven't been able to get a hold of your grant out of Wellesley. I did talk to Dan Walsh, who's the former commissioner in Needham. He's now in Lincoln. And
he upgraded.
He said he,
I said he upgraded.
No, there's too much junk in Needham.
Oh, okay, that was it. He couldn't enforce it.
Quite honestly, he said, I don't have to remember having to deal with it.
Okay. And how long has it been since, when did he?
He was there for about 8 years.
And recently moved, so this would be?
Yeah, about a year and a half.
Okay. All right, I'm going to turn it over to, because Alderman Hess-Mahan is next, and I have quite a list, and we can come back to Alderman Danberg and Blazer. Okay, so do you want me to add you to the list?
Maybe not.
Alderman Hess-Mahan?
Well, I actually had a question, and I wasn't going to comment, but it sounds like people are mixing them both, so if I could ask a question and make a comment.
Yeah, if it's your turn. Use your time wisely.
Well, I always like to ask permission to share.
Oh, thank you.
And then go ahead and do what I was going to do.
Okay, sure.
Dory, I remember when Dave Parsick, about 5 years ago or so, we had an issue up in West Newton in Ward 3 with a backyard where the owner had quite a collection of trash and probably garbage too that was under a tarp. And the neighbors discovered it because on a warm, sultry summer day, it exuded a certain aroma that got people's attention. And I remember that, you know, Dave was able to resolve that situation. I assume he did because I never heard back. But, you know, felt he had enough authority to go in there for health reasons. I guess I'm wondering if you've had since then, since you've been here, any situations that are similar to that. In other words, you know, trash in the backyard and it smells, you know, the concern is it's a health hazard. The neighbors and the person that's living there, and where you've been able to go in and have them clean it up.
No.
Have you had a complaint like that?
No. We have had situations where people have been concerned about junk. Yeah. And you've gone and looked, but usually it was not something that rose to the level of the health hazard. But we've had some bad odor complaints, and we have gone and looked into them, but we haven't had, you know, trash under a tarp.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty, I don't know.
I mean, I think what I'm saying is there isn't anything in here that would help us do that. And it's, I understand, not intended to be for health reasons, but we do have the ability to go and investigate complaints. Usually it's not outside that is the major health and sanitation problem, but you know, if there were a health issue that arose, we can go and look.
So the comment I was going to make, more or less along the lines of what John said, and you know, Bill Cummey is one of the voices against doing this at all. My concern about it is the way it's written and the way it's going to be interpreted is, you know, and Professor Baker can correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, the Constitution.
Well, he's next.
Yeah.
Will have his chance. Yeah. In a way. There's a problem of void for vagueness, where you write a law that is so wide open, you know, vagrants, vagabonds, uh-huh. You know, that kind of law where what is a vagrant or a vagabond? You don't have a sufficiently sharp, narrow definition. And it ends up being unenforceable if it's challenged. And my concern here is twofold. Number one, that it would be challenged if we don't really narrowly tailor the language here to make sure we're getting just at the problem and not at any other, you know, perceived problems that are beyond the scope of what you're trying to do. So in drafting the language, and as it currently stands, I couldn't possibly support it. It's just way too broad. I think it's too open to interpretation for all the reasons John said. One person's junk is another person's treasure. I remember not too long ago where the Lexington Parkview units are, the 10 affordable housing units that Bob Engler's company did. When we went to visit the site ahead of time, the owner had a telephone booth and a few other things out in the backyard that were unsightly collectibles. And the neighbors actually preferred him being there than having housing next to them. So I guess just by way of example that one person's treasure, another person's junk, and not all the neighbors are going to have the same reaction to it, although I suppose if it hadn't been 10 years going in, I might have a different reaction. I also have a very different memory of the constructive demolition ordinance that we passed. My memory of it, and I may be totally wrong about this, but I thought...
Are you talking about the abandonment?
Yeah, okay. It was an issue where the properties, the owner wanted to get rid of them so that he could build parking lots. He needed parking. And that when the Historic Commission denied a demolition delay, a demolition permit, he went and did everything he could to constructively, you know, destroy these houses by leaving the windows wide open, so forth
up a
and
new
so
corner.
On. And so that was the problem that we were addressing there. And again, no, please correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think we have a general ordinance about that.
Yeah, we do.
No demolition by neglect, right. Okay, all right. So, all right. But that was the problem that I recall that we were addressing. Mm-hmm. Again, my concern here, everything that John said about his privacy rights, you're going to start, you know, enforcing something that is inevitably going to create conflict and it's going to give authority to inspectors to go on people's property that's beyond anything they have right now. I think you proceed very cautiously in pursuing this avenue. And the final thing I want to mention is we in Ward 3 in West Newton Hill I don't live on the hill, but on the other side, on Western Hill, there is. I should. we had the White Elephant, is what I think everybody knows it on Chestnut Street, where in order to get that person to fix that house, they had zoning and building code violations, had a pool without an enclosure that was never finished and was clearly neglected. As I recall, we were able to go in and go to court, and actually this guy was held in contempt and spent the night in the hoosegow. And suddenly...
Night where?
In the jail.
But what's the term you used?
Hoosegow.
No,
hoosegow.
Yeah. I know, but...
Don't you ever watch Westerns, man?
Nah.
Okay.
Sorry.
Anyway, that clears the mind like an imminent hanging. This guy came around and decided to, you know, fix all the problems of the house.
What was he going to be hung for?
for not finishing his house using contempt of court, because the city, I believe, got a court order asking him to fix the violations.
He has not finished that house.
I didn't say he has.
Yeah. Okay.
But there's people living in it, or this car's parked in front of it, let me put it that way. The pool's
no tires, yeah.
Well, we used to call those the neighbors, but I grew up out in the rural area. So anyway, the car's up on the block. Never mind.
Yeah, I got that one.
Okay, I'm done now.
Okay. I just want to make one comment before letting Mr. Baker respond to Mr. Hesmahan's comment. Alderman Blazer, I think I heard you say something about your reluctance to pass this, and for reasons that the commissioner spoke, that's because my neighborhood has these as well. But I guess what really bothers me the most is in the purpose statement, it talks about, if you have health, wording here doesn't really address that because it's something different. Safety and welfare of the citizens by preventing blight and protecting property values. This is where, that goes to, whether it's my view of trash or treasure and neighborhood integrity and things like that. I think that's where it's starting to sound a little bit, yeah, thank you. So I think if we're looking at health and safety, then let's look at health and safety and give the tools that can do it and make it as narrow as possible. But to protect property values, then in my opinion, that's a real slippery slope. So that's my comment. Alderman Baker?
Alderman Hesman had corrected the doctrine about void for vacance. The famous case was disorderly conduct where someone was picked up for doing a little dance in the street. He's a guy known as Shufflin' Sam. It was the Shufflin' Sam case. Anyway, it's actually my old town.
No. Did you relate to him or something?
No, I can't dance.
Well, apparently neither.
But the point here is that he's accurate on that because this statute is a criminal sanction. I think that the thing that I would indicate, though, that there is a well-defined doctrine in law about nuisances, which can be visual nuisances as well. They're not just limited to health and safety issues. It's an unusual case, but there's a famous case on the North Shore where somebody actually piled up containers, did all sorts of stuff to try and annoy his neighbors. Ended up with a very substantial damage report. These kind of things are a challenge. I think that the commissioner is concerned about going on somebody's property. There are two aspects of this that I may want to tease out. One is what's visible for public view, as opposed to from the abutting properties. If it's an abutter situation, that's a private nuisance. What these are declaring, however, is a public nuisance. And there can be impacts on the value of properties, because that's what one of the reasons behind zoning generally. We try and prevent people from putting a gas station up next to us because we don't want to have the house that we've invested in lose value as a consequence. So I think that there is a zone of regulatory availability here. The question is whether this, as currently framed, does the job. And I think there is value in thinking about what is the narrowest class that you can support that would reach this particular kind of difficulty that you've been concerned about. So I'm less concerned about the concept than I am about just how to define it. Now, to the credit of the authors, they tried to quantify some things that are hard to quantify. Substantial amount, they put a cubic foot, and that's a measurement question, and how you measure it is indicated. Reasonable time, they tried to indicate it 60 days. So there are attempts here to try and produce some benchmarks by which an inspector can go into the property and make the judgment. I think that's laudable, and I think we ought to encourage that. So I guess my sense is that I would first look at this as a potential civil fine rather than a criminal fine, mm-hmm. because there's criminal disposition in here. That'll help some of the concerns about people being put at risk of doing time. Too many of us watch Easterns as opposed to Westerns, so Easterns is a term we don't pick up on very often. But to the extent that there is some, it seems to me, benefit to having the ability to control the egregious situation that's visible from a public way. So if the authors were willing to consider doing a little more homework on how to frame this as a civil ordinance as opposed to criminal, to try and look at things that are visible from a public way, to clarify that you're talking about nuisances, not just property values. Because nuisances is a fairly well-defined idea in the law. And then do a little bit more work on the definitional part here. You might get to a version of this that the committee could support, and we could actually recommend to our colleagues without getting in a situation where they can, in turn, come back at us and say, what are you guys up to with this
committee? Okay, great. Commissioner Lozak, and then... Alderman Kalis.
Just two quick points. When you talk about the demolition by neglect, I just want to be clear. It only applies to properties that are designated historic.
Correct.
So I just want to be sure that people understood that, just not just any house. The other thing is that Alderman Baker was just saying, I think has a lot of merit, to move this to a civil situation versus a criminal situation would probably make more sense. And perhaps even a ticketing situation. And usually when they start adding up, people start paying attention. We have a hearing officer that they always appear, and then they get into the Newton District Court if they'd like. But the fact of the matter is, most of the time to get these kinds of situations corrected, it's a matter of getting people's feet moving. And so if you lay a ticket on them, yeah, they can appeal it. But in the meantime, they've waited long enough to get another ticket. And that's for $100 more than the previous ticket. And I mean, if we find the right, as the Alderman pointed out, the right criteria for making those determinations. So I just think that those kinds of presentations, the public nuisance issue, I think if you're going to formulate this, that's the way to go with this. I think it should be far more benign than really vicious enforcement. I think, again, most of the time we find it, our policy has always been sort of a constructive engagement situation, and that's where you get compliance much more quickly. We're going to be more of a nuisance to them than they're going to be to anybody else if we start to get on them, and that's our habit. So I think that more of, I like to think about it as, look, the people who are doing this are Newton residents, so let's be cognizant of that fact and make sure that we're treating them fairly. And at least giving them a full hearing, and we get in and talk to them. Maybe we have to hit them with a ticket. They can appeal it. We can always dismiss it. But they have to keep their feet moving. And that's the whole key to all enforcement, is to get whoever is the violator's feet moving in the right direction. So I think those kinds of... And there aren't a whole lot of these, so I really don't think we have to. The bigger ones, are usually a result of illegal businesses, illegal activity of some sort. And we're on those already. These are just mostly folks that have just sort of fallen into a bad habit, in my view. Bad habit by our determination. They think they're fine. Believe me, they do.
Okay, thank you. Marie?
Oh, I just wanted to point out that the current version that is before the committee, the current version does give both the criminal and the alternative, the discretion for civil penalty, only a ticketing. The first version that this committee, that voted before this committee many months ago, did have only a criminal penalty. But right now there's both, so we could take out if this committee wanted the criminal portion of that.
Great, thank you. Alderman Kalis and
Dan Bergen. I have nothing new to add, really, except for what you said, Alderman Johnson, about focusing on safety, on health. I can support something like this, and I want to, but it has to be very specific. I would encourage us to really cast a wide net, not just look at our neighboring communities, but at other communities, because we could sit here hour upon hour looking at language when other communities that are using something like this probably have already parsed the words, and that's where this is going to be important, is the parsing of the words. So I really think it's important that we get a variety of different inputs, bring them together, and hone it so it's what we want for the city. Okay.
Great. Thank you. Alderman Dan Bergman Yates.
Okay. Let Alderman Yates speak because he hasn't spoken.
Oh, thank you. I was at a neighborhood meeting involving Firehouse down in Beacon in Washington. Let's hope you never hear of it. A couple of questions, and forgive me if you already touched on them, that my old inner-city anti-poverty experience leads me to, in rat control, there were two things that rats needed, and one was food and one was harborage. So what regulations do we have to prevent rats from inhabiting portions of our community?
We go in, and if there are rat holes, we make people get exterminators to exterminate. So we already have plenty of power to go in and go after rats.
Well, what about the conditions that make them possible? The shelter and the food, are those against the health code?
Yes.
Okay, so if...
So for example, dumpsters are a frequent place that we have problems with rats, and we make people get their dumpsters emptied more frequently or be more careful how they use their dumpsters. If they're open, we have them close them, things like that. And in general, whoever has complained about the rats in somebody else's yard usually has the problem in their yard too, so that we look at all of the existing conditions and basically mediate cleaning up any place where the rat holes are. And it isn't just call the exterminators, but you've got to get rid of
the situation. In the case of the dumpsters, is that food or is that shelter as well? Or they have both together?
Yeah, generally it's the food, but...
Okay, because like harborage struck me as the overgrown vegetation. But the other way of approaching this, it seemed to me after Alderman Blazer showed me some shocking pictures of a site somewhere in the city, it looked to me like a junkyard. And it occurred to me that a junkyard, I think, is a defined use in other municipalities. Do we define that anywhere in our ordinances? And is it allowed anywhere? Is it prohibited anywhere?
I don't believe there's any definition of a junkyard.
Okay.
And there are secondhand, you know, junk dealer licenses, but that's,
no, that's
different. A different thing.
No, I think just there are other communities that do have such uses. And
are you talking about a junkyard as a business?
Yeah.
Or a junkyard as in the yard as junk?
As a business with a definition that might in fact apply to one of these sites.
But the problem, sorry.
No, I'm just saying, if we had a definition of junkyard, which was sort of...
Not called recycling center.
Well, maybe, but just the definition of junk or debris here...
Recycling, right?
With that, and that was an allowed use maybe somewhere, but it was a specifically disallowed use in the residential districts. Would that therefore give the inspectors the right to...
You have to prove they're doing it as a business.
Well, does it have to be as a business to...
Well, then you said your yard is junk. I mean, it's not...
Well,
back to the same place where we are.
I mean, a junkyard, you get on Cross Street, off to one side, just before there's a place down there, it's a junkyard. It's a recycling center now. You know, uh-huh. It's no longer called a junkyard because now it's a legitimate business. But if you're referring to someone's yard as a junkyard, that's a big joke. That's not a line of business.
But if it is...
Well, you can call it whatever you want. You know, but the fact is that I can't say they're operating a business.
No. I'm saying that the physical appearance is the same thing as a prohibited use in that district.
It has to do with the business, not with their content.
Okay. Are you two? Okay. Alderman Danberg, then Blazer, Albright, and Swiss.
I can see that Alderman Yates has never had the pleasure of watching the show Hoarders, because if he had, he would know that the hoarders would never, ever want to get rid of any of the items that they have in their yard. And that's part of the problem. They wouldn't sell it, they wouldn't give it away, and they wouldn't throw it away, because they have emotional connections to everything that's there. And that's, we may be dealing with some of this, and I'm sure there is some mental pathology here. Otherwise, we wouldn't be looking at this kind of problem.
Exactly the problem in your neighborhood. It's exactly what it is.
And so we do have, for example, in talking about, well, going, what would allow us to go on somebody's property, we have defined in the city ordinance an automobile that has not been registered for more than 10 days as something that needs to be removed. And we are able to do that. We're able to go on people's property. It's a police issue because it's of the way we have it set up. And in fact, I...
But you can define an unregistered automobile.
Okay. Yeah. So we're talking about, and I think we're making a lot of progress here. We've gotten to the point where we realize that we need more objectivity, because objectivity is the only thing that's going to allow the ISD to be able to handle this without just giving them a headache and having them not be able to properly describe the reason why they're handing them a ticket. And there was a Supreme Court justice, I think,
you don't want to wait, because you're coming up next.
Butters. Who said thank you?
Oh, okay.
Who, when they were trying to get a definition of pornography,
can we let
said
the we first?
Yes.
Said
you will know it when you see it.
Okay.
I'm sorry,
Jim, I think you have
to
step your glasses. It's all right, go ahead,
Susan. I just wanted to say that while you guys were talking, I grew up with violations of houses with junk in their yard. Mm-hmm. And I found multiple, many, many, many cities with an ordinance. Spokane, Washington, Jacksonville, Florida, Dallas, Texas, Fort Collins, Colorado. They've written ordinances, and I think we can just study those and pick up mm-hmm. something that would be useful to us. They even have pictures of examples of what it looks like. So I would suggest that there's lots of models out there that you can find.
Okay. Good.
Sorry for interrupting.
I think I've said what we everybody else has said. You know, if we're dancing around the rodent issue, well, this person could have 50 cats, and if they have cats, they're not going to have a rodent issue. But they would still have the trash, and the trash. It's not the. We can deal with the health issue. What we have no way of dealing with is the accumulation of huge amounts of trash in a few yards in the city of Newton that we just can't do anything about. And when we have looked at other problems that we just couldn't do anything about, we created ordinances that were worded in the right way that we could do something about them. And I think, is there anybody who doesn't understand what it is that we're trying to get at this ordinance? Is there any question about that? So what we really need to do here, and I'm going to, we've got other things to uh-huh. do, but I'll let Dick have the last few words, is wordsmith this to a point where we can get it right and get it narrow enough so that ISD can go in there and know that what they're looking at and what they're ticketing is something that nobody is going to say, oh no, this is just art. There is a difference between art and collections and trash. And I think you know it when you see it. And we put 375 square feet in here, but I would suggest that the ones that we're dealing with are 10 or 20 times more than that. And so...
Well, Toby, I still have
a
discussion on who's
going to enforce this. Okay. I'm done. All right. I want to bring it to the
board.
Excuse me. I want to give Alderman Swiston. Excuse me. John.
Among the things that were clear, I was just curious, and he doesn't have to answer it now, but it was Alderman Baker had said that there is a legal definition of nuisance.
No, I say there's a doctrine of nuisance, basically, that talks about an adverse effect on neighbor's property and the condition of what your property is doing. But it is expanded over time to include visual nuisances, not just things like that.
Legally, what does the word nuisance mean?
Nuisance is... It means basically an interference with the use and enjoyment of your property. That's the technical, you know, expanded version.
Close to an attractive nuisance. Okay.
Attractive.
Which is, you know, the main doctor. I'm hoping you to.
No, there's enough.
Okay, are you all set? Can I just make a suggestion, Alden Danberg and Blazer? I still think there's a fair amount of work to do. So two things that I would ask of you is to Google, as Alderman Albright did, to kind of see what else other places, because I would say to you also that Wellesley and Wayland are probably not, you know, places where you're going to see a lot of this. You might go to some communities where you might see more of this than
they are. As closely as we do, so right. The ability to nuisance is probably not as
The other thing is that I suggest you work with Alderman Baker and Commissioner Lojek and Maria Lawler to kind of rescope your language. And I would highly ask you, if you want this person, being myself, to support it, let's get rid of the word property values, because I just think that is a huge slippery slope.
We aim to please.
Thank you. Alderman Yates?
I would ask the two sponsors if they could...
Three sponsors, but two are here.
Oh, okay, whatever.
I just want to make sure Alderman Schwartz is included.
That's fine. I won't give the address, frankly. I don't know it. But on Wetherill Street, between Elliott and Linden Street...
Alderman Yates, please. But I don't want this on tape and stuff. I think that's unfair, Alderman Yates. So you can take this offline. Please. I just don't think we should be talking about specific properties. Okay? Okay. You can take it offline and suggest whatever. Yes, Alderman Swiston.
And okay. One other small point, just to remind, because I think something that the commissioner said kind of struck me is, I understand if there is a problem, but he keeps saying it's a handful, it's very few. I don't know that an ordinance is the right way to solve a small problem, unless there's suspicion that it's going to grow, that it's a sign that it's getting worse and worse. I guess maybe that's just a different philosophy. It seems like a really, really large mallet to solve problems.
Well, I just want to make one comment. I disagree with that, because I think that if you have a problem that you cannot solve, whether it's a few or more than a few, you've got to, in order for the city to be able to solve a problem, if there's only one in the city, unless we have the tools to be able to do it, it's going to just have to stay there. And it doesn't matter whether it's 12 houses or more than 12 houses or 3 houses. I think we need to be able to deal with this, because this is an issue that is preventing the neighborhoods that these
causing
places are in
nuisance.
From enjoying their properties.
I don't disagree with that. I think what I was hearing, or my gut instinct is that an ordinance may not be the tool. I agree we need a tool, but when something is small, an ordinance may not be the tool we're looking for. If it's something like it's an issue that we feel is going to be growing and going to be an epidemic in our town, I see controlling it with an ordinance. I'm not disagreeing that we need to solve problems and we need tools to solve problems. I'm just questioning whether the ordinance is the right tool.
Do you have an alternative?
If you have a better tool, would you be more than happy to hear?
Right. Yeah. Do you have an alternative? Well, let's...
That's how we did this, because we couldn't come up with another tool.
Yeah.
Frankly.
Okay. All right. Is there any further discussion? If not, is there a motion to hold?
So moved.
Okay. All those in favor? It's Alderman Swiston, Baker, Johnson, Danberg, and Yates. Okay. Thank you. Dory, thank you for coming tonight. And John, we still need your services here. This was a John evening.
But if you leave, they're going to make you...
Alderman Hesperhan, do you want to come up? Because these are your two items. Do you have a preference in which order to take one versus the other? Okay. Alderman Lojek, could you please come to the table? Yeah. I always call you. I do that all the time. So. We have docket items 102-11 and 95-11. Do you have a preference in which order we should take them, since they really...
Well,
No.
No? Okay. Then we'll do 102-11, Alderman Hesmahan, Johnson, Commissioner Lojek, and Candace Havens requesting an amendment to Chapter 17 to establish a fee for filing a notice of condo conversion. This came back to us from finance, and there is, I don't know, oh, James has joined to the table as well. So you're going to talk about this, because you mentioned about kind of what was discussed in finance. Yes. Great.
So yeah, I'll just briefly go over kind of the backstory on this. So this was last before ZAP, about a year or 2 years ago, June 2011. It was one of, or two of three items. One of those items was a zoning ordinance amendment that went to public hearing the following September and then was approved and is now part of the zoning ordinance. The zoning ordinance amendment clarified that accessory apartments are a use therefore could be dealt with in that way. But these items were sent on to finance to look at the fee portion. At the same time, the law department also worked on new language, which is included here in the memo. So this is different language from what was seen 2 years ago. But finally, finance had multiple conversations on this, but ultimately they sent it back to ZAP for consideration of one question, which was why we should be treating condo conversion any differently from any other sale or transfer of property. So if you like, I can talk about a little bit of the analysis. I mean, the planning department's perspective on this, and is shared with ISC, is that we should treat condo conversion more like development and less like a sale or transfer of property, and that people are taking action to change their property in order to increase its value, and that change necessarily triggers the need for review where necessary for the legitimate public interest. And in this case, we identified three public interests. In the memo, one of those, of course, is still this question of the legality of the change, ensuring that in fact, when the transfer of ownership occurs, we're not seeing also a change in use, such as when an accessory apartment is converted to a condominium, that would be considered a change of use under ordinance. The safety concern, anytime you're looking at a multi-unit building, any safety issue in an individual unit or in a common area to the overall building presents a safety issue to the entire building and therefore should be addressed. And then finally, data collection. It's really the rate of condo conversion is actually a really important type of information for the city to track so that we can understand how our housing profile is changing over time. I also would note that under Chapter 12, Section 1, the health department already, right there in your hand, has the ability to inspect property. That same provision that allows them to inspect apartments when they change hands also allows them to inspect apartments at the time of condo conversion. So we are doing this already on the health side. This would allow us to match that on the safety side.
Yeah, she doesn't do it.
Understood.
Just they don't know they're being converted.
Right.
We don't have to wear
that. That's the point. That's why we suggest it.
Exactly.
Just want to know that they're actually being converted. I'm sorry, James.
No, that's it. So that's kind of background analysis on the item.
Okay.
Can you put me on the list?
I don't have a list for you, but you can start. Unless Alderman Hesmahan, you want anything?
Just briefly, I mean, this all started, I won't name the specific property, in West Newton. When an innocent buyer, two innocent buyers, bought a house and two condos, what they thought were two condos, it turned out the history provenance on it was that it was originally one house in a single family zone that had gotten an accessory apartment and they were turned into condos, creating basically a two-family situation. As a result, they were in violation. It was non-compliant. So that's since been resolved. But in order to prevent that from happening again, because unfortunately, in the process of finding this out, I discovered that there may—I want to be very careful—may be some additional situations where this exact same thing has happened. So you may. When those people go to sell, you may find out again what's going on. But certainly, we want to prevent innocent buyers from getting hurt, number one. Number two, I think all of the reasons that James stated and that John stated before, and the reason I think Brookline has an ordinance like this, is to catch the kinds of things that are just gross violations, both of health and of building code violations, where someone's done a conversion, maybe done it on the cheap or didn't know any better, then you end up with egress issues and all sorts of other serious fire and safety mm-hmm. issues. So that was the impetus behind this. This is not about trying to prevent people from having a condominium.
Because they don't need a special, unlike right now, because they're not detected, they don't need a certificate of occupancy the way a new building construction would need.
Alderman Baker.
Well, I think this makes eminent sense. The question I'm just a little puzzled by is that we have the health department has the ability to inspect rental property anytime it's rented. Is that?
And transfer technically.
Yes, yeah, the health department is
sure that
it came to condo conversion to
rental. Yeah.
They don't do it.
No, I understand. So I guess the thing that this would be inspectional services who would be
doing? No, that's the health.
No, I understand.
We
No. I'm what I'm concerned about is that we've got a kind of divided authority.
Can I make it?
Yeah, sure.
Because that's your concern. They have this ordinance in Brookline. They call it a bylaw, of course. They have this bylaw in Brookline for condo conversion, and it's a joint inspection when it happens. Fire, health, and ISD. Health has their concerns, which are the housing code. Our concerns are the building code and the zoning code. And the fire department, of course, has this, you know, the fire alarm and detectors and such. The whole point is that, you know, what they found was people buying real pigs and pokes, as it were, like the Who's Gout.
I know the pigs and pokes.
A good famous legal term.
I'm going to get a good thesaurus.
But the point is that, you know, we found some really egregious issues with people buying. A lot of people are very ignorant when they're buying. A lot of times when the market is hot, particularly, people are jumping on these things. They're buying these terrible situations, bad egress, all kinds of building code violations. Indeed, the biggest concern here when I brought it up was the zoning code issue that, you know, we found that an accessory apartment converted to condo. And there was nothing that anyone could see that prohibited that. So, I mean, there was nothing in our ordinance that said that couldn't happen. You know, sensibly, we'd think it couldn't happen because we're immersed in this. But somebody from the outside, just convert it to condos and sell them off. And these people actually, and the real disaster is these, you know, both relatively young couples get absolutely killed in this transaction. I mean, killed. One of them had to move out, move back to their parents' house. They couldn't refinance. I mean, they were screwed financially. And eventually, the market tanked. And they took a big loss when it was legalized, and they had already moved out, and they lost hundreds of thousands of dollars. It was just really terrible. That shouldn't happen to anybody that lives in the city of Newton. And James pointed out very specifically, the three concerns are, you know, the safety issue, the zoning issue, and then the other thing is that you get we get better records.
Right.
We immediately get the master deed, the unit deeds, and they all are scanned up, and now they're in our database. Mm-hmm. So that anybody, the citizen, is looking, that's for sale now, they can look in, oh, there's the unit deed, I can look at that, there's the master deed, I can look at that. And so the three things are very legitimate concerns of the city. So that's why we think this is just makes sense. I don't think a $100 fee to a developer of a 2-unit condo or a 10-unit condo per unit is any big deal. You know, that doesn't even cover the cost of our inspection. But the point is, they should have to pay something for us to do this, and then we give them a certificate of condo conversion, and it's done. I don't know why this would be a big concern of the Finance Committee. I really don't.
Yes, Alderman Swister.
It just makes a huge amount of sense to us, to me. My question is, the flip side is, right now my understanding, obviously, anybody who wanted to obey a law, there isn't a law to obey. So we're going to catch all those people who really like to obey the law. My question is, one of the things that Alderman Hesman Hand had brought up when this first came up was, you know, they just filed this over with the Register of Deeds. Like, how is there something that would trigger us? Construction is easy to trigger. You know, somebody's got building equipment, a neighbor could say there, it's like, do they have a permit so they can catch? How Can we catch somebody, because I think some of these, I'm going to suspect they knew they were not doing something that they wanted the city to know about.
Sure.
How do we prevent people from deliberately hiding it from us? Is there a way for us to catch it that way? Because it clearly isn't statewide, so the county registry of deeds is not going to know. They're not going to require there's the city approval, because not all cities require it. So, am I wrong? Or is there a way for us to make it so that they can't convert without telling us?
Many of the cities just in the core area, Boston, Cambridge, Watertown, which is a town, do require it. Brookline, is Watertown a city? So there are a bunch right here in the core area that do require it. So, and I don't know how they handle it, but I imagine that we could talk to them. And
well, remember, if we could, you know, it is, I understand what you're asking. The problem is that we'd need kickback then from the assessor's department, which gets notified of this by the registry. When these things come in, they do a data dump, I think, every month about these conversions. Then we would find out that these things had been converted without being inspected. And we could, you know, one of my big things is that our shared data in this city is not good enough. Mm-hmm. It just isn't good enough to do all the things that we're supposed to be doing. So, but we could get a report back from the assessor's department that says, these are the buildings that have been converted this month. There might be 2, there might be 10, there might be 12. We only have to look and see, did they come in here and ask mm-hmm. for it? Listen, we had 2 requests for condo conversion certificates this month, and we had 10 condo conversions. Well, you know, we know we got to look at these things. But so that's the way it could work, and then we can enforce.
And since we do need, at a minimum, we need a fire cert in order to sell a property.
Exactly.
That if there's a way that we could share it with the fire department so that when they're being called in for a fire cert, that they say, I have a previous fire cert for this unit, so I'm allowed to do it again, versus, we've never been in this building before. Why do we suddenly need to do a fire cert for this unit?
See, that again, that's my whole pet peeve about the data collection. See, if the fire department got a request for a fire cert, they know they can't sell it unless they do have one.
Right.
They can go in and say, do they have a condo conversion certificate, or have they applied for one, which would be all in the database we should be sharing.
That would be a nice
So as soon as they go in, it's to enter it as a permit, they can go and look to see if they've applied for a condo conversion certificate.
Well, but at a minimum, can't we say before they go in to do a fire cert, make sure there's a fire cert on file for them? Because obviously, part of what you're saying in order to do a condo conversion is they're going to need a fire health and ISD certificate. You know,
right.
I mean, that's the plan. But okay, that makes me feel a lot better, because I can just see, even right now, even if we didn't have this wonderful data sharing, which, as beautiful as I think it should be, I don't think we're that close to it. That's great, but at a minimum, they must know what fire certs they've issued before, and at minimum say, don't issue a fire cert that you haven't issued before.
Or until we get the data sharing, we could just have the fire department copy ISD on all of their fire certs.
Right. Yeah, we've got them going on Community Plus, so they can go into the database now. When they get a request for fire, they should be going in there and looking. Has this been applied for yet? I may not be done yet, but it should be applied for.
I think that's much faster to get to, because right now they can tell whether they've ever issued a fire cert for a particular property, so it's something they can check right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Alderman Baker?
I'm sorry, but John, let me, I think this is fine. It's just that right now, with the commissioner and dealing with the sanitary code, it's if somebody is not converting to a condo, but just selling a house with a rental unit, would they normally go in and do the same?
No. We don't have any idea of that. It's just rental stuff.
Yeah, it's different if the whole building is being owned by the same owner and they're just renting a unit. It's completely different than if you want to sell it and you now have 2 separate owners.
No, I understand that. I'm just trying to read what says. It says, whenever an apartment, tenement, or room in a lodging house is vacated by the occupant thereof, right, or when it's converted to a condominium, which is this situation, it may be certified by the Commissioner of Health prior to being reoccupied by a new tenant, lodger, or occupant.
Right. So it doesn't happen.
Well, I understand that, but it's on our ordinance. So I guess the point is that if somebody is renting a property, they sell the house and it's going to be a rental property, shouldn't we make sure it's safe just the same as we do if it's a condo?
Well, we already have that.
No, it says certificate of, but John is talking about fire safety and not just the state sanitary code.
Right. Well, the fire safety would be inspected.
It has to be inspected every time anyway. Every time a house changes hands, it has to be inspected by the fire department. I mean, and that's smoke detectors.
No, I understand. I'm just, you're...
We don't get involved in normal house transactions. We don't involve it. We're talking about condo...
Well, wait a minute, John. I understand you're talking about condo conversions. I'm just trying to understand the principle that you talked about, which is that we want people to be safe, mm-hmm. right? And the fact that it's converted to a condominium, we've got three people going in and looking at it. You've got fire, you've got health, and you've got...
building code.
Building, right?
Right.
So you're looking at it if it's a condo conversion, I
guess.
Well,
we're suggesting that.
Right. But all I'm trying to say is that the logic of that seems to me makes sense to do it if somebody is renting a property, right? Because you want to make sure that's safe too, even if it's not converted.
But that is only under the health, and that's a state law. Not, that is the local. I don't know. But
this, right? this is an ordinance.
That's an ordinance.
That's the ordinance. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
But it may have a parallel in state law. I don't know that, but that's our ordinance.
Did you hear that?
Multi-tenanted properties is what we're mostly dealing with here. Because what happens is now you have multiple owners who don't have control over the other owners necessarily. That's the point. You're buying a single-family house. Hey, you're at your own risk. Go ahead. You buy what you buy. But if you're buying, you're buying into half of a duplex or half of a three or a six, then it is incumbent upon us to make sure that other people aren't endangering you.
Well, I understand that, John. But if you're buying a duplex with two apartments in it, right? And why wouldn't you want to inspect the apartment? It's not just a condominium.
I don't think we should inspect it.
It's your
building code stuff. But I think.
I feel like we're talking past each other. Question that whether we should apply the building inspection, the ISD inspection, also the transfer of tenancy on apartments?
Yeah, if somebody's got a two-family.
Right.
I mean, this seems to be a narrow class of condo conversion, right?
Right.
Now, I can see people saying, okay, now I'm going to get out of the condo conversion business. I'll just sell my duplex and I won't do the conversion anymore. I can see that happening.
Not when they make...
The pricing,
not when they make hundreds of thousands of dollars more by having each unit sell separately as a condo. Over on the Eddy Street near me recently, we had two condo units in a two-family that sold right before they flipped it and converted it into two condos. Had been sold to them for around $600. They sold one unit for $550 and the other for $450. So,
and that's low. I'm going to say
correct.
That's low. They could have sold both for about.
Well, I understand that.
Where are you going? Because I see that when you're finished.
Yeah, it's just that I think this is probably beyond the scope of this.
I just want to understand,
but the logic of it seems to me.
So what I believe you're saying, Alderman Baker, is we need to look at this ordinance to see if something needs to be. And that be more.
I hear it, yeah. But that's not going to stop me from voting for this.
Okay, so, but let's talk about that off.
No, I'm fine. I just need to understand the distinction.
All right, so it sounds like to me that for 102-11, and I think it would be fair, though I want to read into the work at 95-11, that the committee is in favor of it. Is that fair? So let me read 95-11 so we can vote on both of them.
Yeah, because it seems like one has to go first.
Yeah, right. Alderman Hesmahan proposing an ordinance requiring that a notice of conversion to condominium ownership be filed with the Inspection Services Department and the property be inspected to determine compliance with all applicable provisions of the state and local codes, ordinances, and the rules and regulations of all appropriate regulatory agencies. So, is there any further discussion on this item? Yes, Alderman has.
I just wanted to clarify, as another ordinance that we recently took up, this is not a zoning amendment.
Right. We know
so
that.
It may not go through any.
No,
of
we talked about that last
time. I just wasn't sure.
Thank you. Alderman Hesmahan and Swiston, and then I'd like to call.
That's what we're
Alderman Swiston.
I just wanted to be clear. Is this the one where basically a commissioner was suggesting, therefore, if we were to treat this like new development, therefore, what it looks like is we're heading towards requiring a fire, health, and ISD inspection. Like, we don't need to change anything here to indicate that that's a direction we think this is...
I'm not sure what you're saying.
Health and fire are already in the code and required. Those inspections are already required, so we're adding the safety inspection by ISD. So the other two that John talked about, coordinating the three inspections.
So you're doing administrative.
That's an administrative.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'll reword my question. When we first started this, you had mentioned that finance had referred back to us asking why we don't treat it like sales, except you're proposing we treat it like development. Is this the one that you were talking about?
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. So this 95-11 is the administration and the what we were talking about, 102-11.
Would be the fees.
But we talked about them together. But I just,
Okay. So what do we need to do to indicate that we agree with planning, or we don't even need to do that?
We're going to vote for the items. Either we vote yes or no. But we don't have to have a public hearing. It's not an ordinance.
Okay, I'm sorry. Is there anything we need to... I'm not sure what status it had that finance had referred
it back. They sent
it back
to us.
But they referred it back to us saying with a suggestion, right?
Well, and we've got some different language, so it's now going to go back to them.
Okay.
Commissioner Loja wants to talk.
I just want to point out also that this doesn't apply to new buildings. It only applies to existing buildings.
Well, that's a condo conversion.
It's a conversion.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else?
Okay. Absolutely agree with you, Commissioner.
All right. Do I hear a motion?
I move to approve.
Both?
Yes.
Okay. So the motion to approve both 102-11 and 95-11, which have been read into the record. Any further discussion? All right?
We're done.
Is that okay?
God bless you all. Did you call a vote?
No, I haven't. I was just wondering what Ms. Dasmahan was wondering about.
I was wondering if there was anything else on after this.
No.
I had documented also.
No. Okay. So hearing no discussion or questions, all those in favor? That'd be Alderman Swiston, Baker, Johnson, Kalis, Danberg, and Yates. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay, great, thanks.
Yep.
Thank you.
I think it's great.